On this season 5 finale, Ghost Joe sits down with Father Bob Bailey, a.k.a. the Paranormal Padre, for a haunting interview on faith, fear, and the forces we dare not name. Then, Edgegrave Dave wraps his Dawn of the Dead trilogy with a final review that's sharp, savage, and diabolical. The veil is thin, the truth is near, and the final chapter might just be the most haunted of all. Let's get started.
Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast. Listen, man, this is the season 5 finale. I know it kind of came up just like crazy, right? But Creepy Ken and I had figured that this was a good point to end this season and to start anew. So we're going to take a couple weeks off, but we'll be back in a couple weeks and we'll be starting season 6 with all amazing new stuff. Maybe not. Maybe the same old stuff. I don't know yet. We haven't thought about it yet, I guess. But let's talk about season 5, right? Season 5 was freaking awesome, man. From the stuff that Edgegrave Dave had given us to John Wright and everything that we've talked about. We've talked about the Dog Man. That was last week's show. We've talked about urban legends and haunted prisons and had great interviews, Sin Schrader Hill. And this episode is definitely, definitely no doozy, man. We interview Father Bob Bailey, also known as the Paranormal Padre. He's a retired Roman Catholic priest. He's been on shows such as Paranormal State, The Haunted, and Expedition X. He's worked with Lorraine Warren and Ryan Buell. And, I mean, the Annabelle doll. I mean, this guy has stories for days, man. And it was a great, great interview. Unfortunately, Creepy Ken and I weren't able to correlate schedules and stuff this week. So it was just me doing the interview. But I'm sure we'll be talking to Father Bob Bailey again, because I'm going to have many, many more questions. And also, as I am recording this, Creepy Ken is also not able to be live with me on this show as well. Listen, man, without further ado, I just want to get right into this. We're going to listen to my interview with Father Bob Bailey. And then, of course, stick around after that, because Edgegrave Dave did an amazing review on Dawn of the Dead, which is the part 3 of his series of the Dawn of the Dead mall and the museum that he had went to and all this stuff. And it's just awesome, man. So you're definitely going to want to stick around for that. But first, let's listen to my interview with Father Bob Bailey. Let's go. From Sacred Rites to Spectral Encounters, Father Bob Bailey, also known as the Paranormal Padre, walks a line few dare to tread. A retired Roman Catholic priest and seasoned demonologist, he's known for his appearances on Paranormal State, The Haunted, and Expedition X, where he's brought spiritual gravitas to investigations of dark forces and haunted locations. As co-founder of the Holy Sword Apostolate and spiritual advisor to the Warren Society, Father Bob blends the theological depth with boots-on-the-ground paranormal experience. So let's welcome Father Bob Bailey. How you doing, sir?
Great. Thank you so much. It's great to meet you.
Yeah, very great to meet you too. Again, I'm sorry Creepy Ken couldn't make it tonight, but maybe we'll have you on again and you could meet him. The Paranormal Padre, right? Where did that come from? Did you make that up yourself or?
No, I didn't. Somebody did that like a long time ago, said that, because at the time there was very few, you know, bona fide Roman Catholic priests doing paranormal stuff. So it was tongue in cheek, but I said, you know, I kind of like it.
What was it that actually drew you into paranormal investigation?
Okay. Well, since I was a child, I had a very close relationship with my mother's cousin, who was a priest, and he used to come next door to my grandparents. And so early on, like, I had so many questions, and he would sit out smoking a cigar, and we would talk about, you know, spiritual things, you know, miracles and all that, the reality of evil, the devil. But as I was growing, I had this urge that I felt I was going to be part of the spiritual battle between good and evil. It's just something that was inherent and never left me. So unfortunately, I had no friends who were into the paranormal. So that kind of went latent for a long time. But, you know, I believed in miracles, visions, apparitions of Jesus, Mary, the saint. So to me, it wasn't a big leap of faith to believe there are spirits out there and obviously demons. So when I got older, you know, I was a pastor at the time. I had met Keith Johnson, and right. I went on his show, and I became a groupie there. And I was like, wow, I can talk paranormal with these people. And it just, that brought out the thing that, you know what? I want to use my priesthood to help in this area because it's needed. So I went to my bishop at the time, and I said, you know, Bishop, I want to do this. And he said, okay. I said, the church has a voice. They want our voice in there. And there's nobody doing it. So, you know, I'd like permission. So I said, okay. And he told me, and contrary to popular opinion, I am not an exorcist. Number one, there are some famous exorcists out there, but you can't be an exorcist without the bishop's approval. I have not done an exorcist. I've done an exorcism. I have done exorcism over home only and did deliverances to people who were oppressed and obsessed. I have not done a full-blown exorcism. And to be truthful, if people saw that, they would run, you know. So, but that's how it got. And then I had a relationship with Ryan Buell. I wrote to him. He wrote right back. We saw the friendship. He asked for my help. And 17 years later, we're still good friends.
From working with figures like Lorraine Warren and Ryan Buell, what's one unforgettable experience or maybe some kind of lesson or something that you picked up along the way that's helped shape you in what you do?
Ryan was very client-oriented, seriously client-oriented. It wasn't just about going to haunted places and you know, trying to do that. You know, he cared about that. And that, I think, set Paranormal State in a different, you know, a notch above the others because of that. And many people have said that they've noticed that. So that's something that came with me too, about how to approach people, particularly when I have my own apostolate with Father Ken Torres. So yeah, and working with Lorraine, I mean, I just learned from her, just seeing what she did. But I will tell you one episode, it was called Church of the Damned. We were at one point it was freezing cold. I remember that. It was an abandoned church. And I went into the little place where all the tech people were. And Chip Coffey was there. And at one point he said the prayer to St. Michael. And when he finished the prayer to St. Michael, he said, what do you think about that? The heat blew up so much so the tech people said, this isn't normal. And I said to myself, do you realize that we have just got proof of the intercession of an archangel? We just documented that with that thing going up. And I thought that was so cool. I didn't doubt St. Michael was with us, but it was, for me, it was an amazing thing.
Well, now, you had mentioned Lorraine Warren, and that you've worked with her, and you've worked with Ed also, or?
No, fortunately, I went to, when I was in the seminary, my friend took me to a college, and I saw him and Lorraine give a talk. So I never got to know Ed, except by from what Lorraine told me and all of that. He had passed away by the time I was on Paranormal State. But right away, she took to me, I took to her. You know, she loves priests. And so, yeah, I mean, I learned things like she taught me about it, when you go to homes, bury the St. Michael or St. Benedict medals on the four corners to seal the property. And also, you know, to be honest with the clients and to tell them, you know, but she was just wonderful to be with, you know. It was just an honor, you know, and now being, if you want to say, spiritual advisor to Nesper, I've been going around with them now of all the places when they bring the museum pieces. I'm so happy. And they know I loved Lorraine. Tony knows I love Lorraine and I love Nesper. So I feel like I'm continuing in the spirit of Lorraine by being a spiritual advisor. And I know she would have wanted that, a Roman Catholic priest to be around. So
with Lorraine and Ed, myself and Ken, this is a podcast. We love the Warrens. We completely believe in everything that they've stood for and the help that they've given and everything like that. So I wanted to preface that before I ask you this question, because I don't want you to think that it's the way we feel. But what do you say to the people who doubt or that challenge the credibility of the Warrens?
This is what I say, and there's been a lot out there right now, particularly when they sold, which I thought was a very wise move with Elton and Matt. But what I say, there's nothing you can say. You know, the old adage, to those who believe, no answer is necessary. For those who don't believe, no answer suffices. You're not going to get anywhere fighting because they're already... I wasn't there during Amityville. I wasn't there during the Smurl. But I believe them.
Right.
Because I know I've come to have a friendship with Lorraine, and I know she's a woman of faith and integrity. And the other stuff is just bashing with people who never met them, who do not know them. And then, unfortunately, there's people that were connected to her or related to her who give a different narrative, and that's for nefarious reasons. I'm sorry.
Right. I mean, I've told you before, I've talked to Keith and Carl on separate occasions and stuff. And I mean, they obviously, that, I mean, they worked with the Warrens way back when, you know, since they were kids, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. With the Conjuring House where I live, you know, I mean, in my state, they, you know, they were like 17, 18, you know, at that point. You know, when they called in the Warrens, you know, you have to call in the big guns. At that point, you know, right. We have to realize our limitations, you know. But, yeah, they did get to work with them, and it's wonderful. And Keith is, and Carl are both great. They're good friends.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because, I mean, I don't know them personally. I just know them from interviewing the both of them separately. But I don't know if I'm right about this. Maybe I'm just going by the pictures and how I met them the first time or whatever. But I feel like Carl is like the not the bad guy, but like the cool, like, you know, renegade kind of guy. And Keith is the more religious, soft-spoken, you know.
Absolutely. They are very, very different. And oddly enough, I'm closer with Carl than Keith because I see Carl more. You know, and Keith and Sandra have a lot to, you know, they take care of their son and they have responsibilities. So, but I do, but they couldn't be any more different. And that's not a put down. It's just.
Oh, no, no, not at all. Not at all.
He's more maverick. He's agnostic.
Right.
She, you know, they're Christians, you know, Keith and Sandra. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yin and the yang, I guess.
So you had co-founded the Holy Sword Apostolate. And that blends spiritual warfare with pastoral outreach. What inspired that creation? And how does that mission differ from, you know, traditional church structures?
Well, first of all, I go into the paranormal world, which, you know, doesn't always happen. You know, I reach out to a lot of people who probably would never come to a church. So in the words of Pope Francis, get out of your rectories and go out where the people are and smell like your sheep. That's what he taught. And so that's what I do. You know, I meet a different type of people than I, you know, than coming to, and sometimes people have come to the church structures and they weren't believed, you know? So, you know, there's that. I was educated a little bit in the seminary, but a lot of that I learned was through years of experience. Anyways, when I was getting onto Paranormal State, all of a sudden, I started getting a lot of inquiries in my state and nearby Massachusetts or Connecticut for help. And so I started a group with my buddy Rob Jacobs called PWSM, the Presidium Warriors of St. Michael. And we would go to homes and help people do deliverance prayers, do exorcism over home. And we were pretty busy, you know. Then I had to take a break, you know, and I didn't do it for a long, you know, for quite a while. But then I wanted to get back into it. but I wanted to give it another name and another avenue. So I took the name The Holy Sword from an experience I had in Italy. There is a cave of St. Michael in Monte Gargano, and that's where St. Michael appeared. And he actually said the stones there were consecrated. And if you, you know, bring the stones, they're like relics for protection. I was kneeling in prayer, and when I closed my eyes, I saw St. Michael. St. Michael took out his sword, and he like knighted me. You know, he touched my head and my shoulders. And I was like, wow. But then after that, he gave me his sword. And, you know, I saw myself holding the sword in the vision. And so that's why I call it the Holy Sword. Father Ken and I, we deal with people in a holistic way. You know, we try to do it psychologically, spiritually, and if they need, medically. So when we get a case, assessors check them out. We get the information back and see, is there something psychological that could be helped? Is there something truly paranormal? Is it a little of both? Or could it be that they need, you know, some medical attention too? So we're more holistic type of ministry. And we have people, we have psychologists. In fact, Ryan Buell is one of our consultants. We have assessors. We're trying to get more medical people on board. And everybody is just, there's no names on the website. It's all anonymous. And they're doing it as a ministry and not for fame.
So, I mean, I know you had said that you don't do, you know, people exorcisms, but obviously I know that you've studied it and you know about it and everything. How, I mean, I remember the TV show Evil, right?
That was great.
You know, how do you differentiate between, if you go into a situation, how do you differentiate, all right, that's mental illness. Okay, that's spiritual oppression. Was there ever a case where they either overlapped or, you know, you were kind of tricked?
Yes. Yes to both. Sometimes there's a little bit of psychological things going on and sometimes spiritual. It's a two-pronged. And what we would do in the ministry is say you have to handle both. You cannot be whole unless, okay, we can, you know, pray over you for deliverance from whatever, you know, demonic or evil spirit that you have. But you also have some kind of mental illness, and you need to go and get that handled. If you don't, you'll never be whole. Sometimes people don't want to hear that. You know, a lot of times they don't want to hear that.
Right.
But as far as tricked, I don't think we were ever tricked. I think some people that came had serious. You can tell. You can just tell when somebody, like some person came. You know, we went to the house. They said, "Where's Chip?" And I said, "Well, I don't work with Chip in ministry." And, you know, she said, "Oh, I can't keep rosaries. They keep breaking. Look." And I'm going like, oh my gosh, you know. So we knew. So you can tell. But now we have assessors that can ask the right questions, you know, and you can tell. And we have some gifted people on, you know, on our network and, you know, who, I don't use the word psychic and medium because it can have a two-handed thing. So I call them gifted people. And some can see from afar and others can, you know, can help, you know, with that. And sometimes they've helped me on investigations too.
Hmm.
But I scrutinize because there's so many so-called psychics and mediums that you really got to vet and be very careful.
Right.
And those who are authentic, they don't want the limelight. They really don't. The point I was getting, senior moment here, is that as you do the work, sometimes your gifts become more sensitive because I've been able to go into a room, not every time, I can't control it, but sometimes I feel the heaviness or the lightness. Sometimes I can, in my mind, I hear or, you know, or sense things. But again, I'm not in control, and it doesn't happen every time. But a gifted person said to me, well, that's because, you know, the more you do it, the more, you know, God will give you for doing the work. Because, you know, unfortunately, people have had things, like you have had things moving, and you know, they've said that so much activity, but when the priest walks in, it goes dormant. You know, the most I saw once was a rocking chair rocking on its own when I went to bless a house. And on Expedition X, they showed I went into one room and I got pushed back, clearly pushed back. So, but other than that, you know, the enemy, the evil spirit, doesn't want to advertise. So it'll go dormant. And that's who say pluses or minus of being the priest, because, you know, other people see phenomenon and we don't really see it because they don't want us to see it.
Is there ever a case where somebody could be walking around possessed, I guess you could say, or with, you know, with a demon inside of them and not know?
I think it's possible. Yeah. Yeah, it is. If they don't understand what's happening. Yeah. That they don't know, but they're acting evil, you know, and you know, there's something there, you know, there's something's attached to the person, but either they want it or they don't know. So it's vitally important to people who are doing investigations and dealing with the paranormal. They have to realize there is a struggle between good and evil. And if there's spirits around, and if there are demonic spirits around, then that means there's also God, the opposite, you know. And so it's important that you protect yourself and pray before, so that, you know, so that nothing attaches, nothing happens. And I do that, you know, I'm traveling with the Warren Museum. Okay. I've been doing that for a little while now. And that's what I do. I anoint everybody. I spray them with holy water. I spray the place and try to bind the spirits. And you got to do that because you just don't know. And I think a lot of investigators don't do that if they're not seasoned, and they get in trouble. If you're not a spiritual person, then if you encounter a demonic, a negative spirit, you're dealing with a fallen angel, and that's formidable. And what I tell groups is, if you don't have that faith, I'm not judging you, but no, be honest with yourself to say, this is not a category I can deal with. I need to get somebody in that can help with that, that knows that. And to be honest, because it does, you do need prayer and you do need to fight with the armor of God. So that'd be my best advice.
Well, we all know that the Ouija board, we've been told that that could bring in, you know, different things that you don't want to come out. But could watching a horror movie or watching a paranormal TV show or, you know, watching The Exorcist or listening to a podcast, not this one, of course, could that bring something to you?
My honest answer would be, I don't think so. And the reason being is I do watch horror movies. People say, well, how can you do that? Because I do the work. I know what's real and what isn't real. And it's entertainment for me. Now I'm just, you know, I limit myself to paranormal shows. I love Project Fear. One of my bucket lists is to meet them, because it's when they're alone, it's that whole, you don't know if there's somebody in there or if it's a spirit. And so it's the suspense that I love. I don't get scared by the entities, but I get scared, by the prospect of suspense. So I don't think so, because I've always loved horror movies. Maybe if you're susceptible, if you have a sensitive spirit that, you know, could, I don't know. I think for everybody, it's individual. I can just speak for myself. Right. I love horror movies. I just saw The Conjuring 4. You know, I think it's individual.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much what Carl said as well. Carl was like, he's like, yes, it could. He goes, but let me explain. Then, you know, basically what he said was pretty much the same type of thing that, you know, if you watch a horror movie or say you watch The Exorcist and it's constantly weighing on your mind and you're believing it and obsessing over it, eventually something is going to latch onto that, or possibly something may
latch onto that. That's why I say it's individual. And, you know, and appropriate too. Now, when The Exorcist came out, I wanted to see it, but I was young. And my mother's cousin, who's a priest, he said, don't let Bobby go because he shouldn't be susceptible to that or at his age. So they didn't let me go. I was upset, right. but I can understand that now because I could have been impressionable. Unfortunately, to retaliate, I read everything about exorcism after that and all the cases. I read Hostage to the Devil, but there is something to the sensibilities. So
what would you say is the most dangerous or the one where, when you went into a house or you were, you said, wow, like this, something's going on here or something happened to you. Like what one really sticks out in your mind? What experience?
Yeah. And actually you can watch it on TV, on YouTube, I think. It's from The Haunted. They took one of our cases from PWSM and we went to a convenience store and we did a house exorcism, house cleansing. Things started to happen. One of the camera guys got bit on his arm and he showed it and it was a bite mark. My friend who's a sensitive, an empath, he was really getting overwhelmed. I had to pray over him for deliverance. A box dropped on its own that should never have dropped. So things like that happened. We did the deliverance and we thought everything was okay. However, unknowns to us, something traveled home with my partner and was at the house and caused a lot of havoc. I mean, he was having dream. It was a seducing spirit. It was a succubus. And
wow!
Even when we did an investigation in the house, one of the guys who was on the computer, one of the tech guys, said, ouch. We went, took off his shirt, and there was a hand mark all red on his back. It freaked him out. So those two, and we have it on tape that a candle holder moved by itself, and that's not caught on camera, because he put a camera on him as he was, thrashing with this demonic thing that was experiencing. But at the end, it took several times. And it was when I asked the wife to take her personal power and to tell the entity, he's my husband, you have no right. And so I think that helped also. And and the deliverance was successful. No further problems. And again, if you go on to YouTube, The Haunted, it's called Demonic Seduction.
So I'm not going to get you in trouble with this question, but when you've done these TV shows, I mean, obviously, that there has to be some kind of Hollywood magic thrown in there here and there, because otherwise people are going to get bored and not watch it. So they got to throw some stuff.
Yes.
But what would you say, the percentage is to where things are real, to where they kind of things aren't so real?
Well, I will tell you this. I was on Paranormal State for 3 years, 3 seasons. And nothing was faked because I was very careful. I would not put my name to anything. They did not. Sometimes production wanted to take it in another direction, and Ryan just said no. And one time I remember he said, I'll walk if you do that. So Oz was kept. There was nothing faked. The only thing that was done is when you have to do the outtakes and the intakes in the beginning and the end. We did. But as far as anything that went on, no. But there are other shows that do. And even The Conjuring 4, it was suspense and you jumped. But I was saddened that very little of that, was the real Smurl case. There's a 1980s movie called A Haunting, and that was about the Smurl case. And that had more factual stuff. And that was more suspenseful to me than that.
Yeah, I had seen the movie and I pretty much felt the same way. I mean, I didn't really know the Smurl case that well, but my thing was, if you compare it to the first one was genuinely terrifying. That first Conjuring, I mean, I might lose view of listeners for this, but I put that right up there with The Exorcist. That movie was terrifying. It was so, so well done. And
it was, and they had more truth in there than the others.
I like the horror movies that are genuinely scary.
Oh, yeah.
Where they don't have to rely on jump scares.
No.
They don't have to rely on CGI and that weird stop motion moving thing that they do now with you know, demons and stuff. And I feel like a lot of these movies are doing that now, you know?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's sensationalism and over reality. If you want to watch something that's scary in knowing, it's the real story behind the Exorcist movie. It's called In the Grip of Evil.
Wow.
It's probably on YouTube. It's a documentary telling the story. And let me tell you, and they go on the facts. It's not making anything up. And so you'll see the real story behind the Exorcist. And it can be frightening.
Yeah.
You know, because fact is scarier than fiction with those kind of stories. So I would watch that. The other one that's right on is The Right, the movie The Right. Yes, that one had, you know, it was, oh, they spit out nails. Yeah, that happened. Exorcists will attest to that. Sometimes they spit out these things, you know. So, and the book by Matt Baglio, The Right, is awesome. I would highly, you know, the Exorcist movie, there was Hollywood in it, obviously, but it was a watershed in the 70s. That was never dealt with, demonic possession. Nobody ever talked about it. It caused a sensation in the 70s that I remember. People getting scared, people running out, people thinking they're possessed. I mean, it was
wow. Yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, that's amazing. I've always loved horror movies. I've been watching them. I mean, I'm an 80s kid, so I've been watching them since, you know, and the 80s had all the amazing slasher movies and stuff. So I grew up with all that stuff.
Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, Freddy, Jason, all of them. You know.
And they have no basis in reality, so it's entertainment.
No. Right. Actually, and that's what's funny is that those are the ones that I like more. Like, for example, I'm not a big fan of Saw because Saw is too realistic for me.
Yeah, I didn't like
Saw is way too realistic for me. Like, I'd rather watch The Evil Dead when the blood that's coming out is like purple and like just like off the wall stuff. Even Terrifier is just ridiculousness.
Yeah.
You know, is it gruesome? Yeah, but it's silly gruesome, you know, like, you know, so it's not based in any kind of reality. Whereas like Saw is a little,
close. It was hard to watch. And I said, I'm not watching Saw 2. No.
Yeah. The first one I liked because of the ending was like a crazy ending to it. You know, like the ending was very surprising. But then after that, it was just kind of redundant.
I love
you know?
Jeepers Creepers too.
Jeepers Creepers was good.
That was a good movie.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to worry about it. As long as you're strong in character and you're not susceptible. And, you know, for some people, like even EVPs can be as bad as a Ouija board. I know one woman, it was a paranormal state case, and she had all these EVPs, keeping them. And Ryan was saying, and I said, you need to get rid of these. You can't hold on to them. Because you keep referring to and going that, you're going to get entrapped. So finally, at the end, she threw them in the sea. So that was wonderful.
When I was doing research on the Annalise Michel case, right? And I was going to play some of the audio that they had recorded. I put it on my computer. And when I tell you, I did whatever I had to do with it. And I'm like, I'm not keeping this on my computer. This, I can't do it. And that stuff doesn't usually bother me, but I'm like, no, I can't. Like that's the screams that girl was doing was not human. I mean, it was
scary.
I mean, I'm getting chills talking about it right now because that really affected you. It's crazy.
Nope. Yeah. Again, fact is scarier than fiction. That's a perfect example, you know, but you know, hearing it, okay, you know, I'm protected enough, but I wouldn't want to keep hearing it because it is diabolical. And if you want to get the point of it, then fine, you know, you do that. But that's really scary. That's scary than seeing the Exorcist Reagan climbing up the wall, you know.
Can you kind of walk us through the process, you know, during a deliverance or an exorcism, even with the house or however
absolutely.
You do it?
I once made once made a video of it. I can't find it. But what I begin with is I make a little prayer altar in the house. And I put, you know, I have holy candle, you know, a statue of Jesus and Mary. I have a few relics of the saints that I will bring with me and the stones from St. Michael's Cave. And I light the candle. And that's like home base. And on that table would be the incense, the holy water, you know, and salt and the metals. And I begin by asking for prayer of protection over those of us who are taking part in that, everybody affected, you know, that will be in that house. And then I say a general prayers of deliverance over the house. Then after that, we go into each room. And my favorite incense thing is incense sticks. You know, I go in the New Way, I go in the Wiccan stores because they always have, and you can get frankincense and myrrh, believe it or not. Right. And these people are actually like, they come in, well, that's cool. You know, we believe in, you know, we don't believe in Satan. You know, we believe, you know, good versus evil. So they're happy to, you know, to provide that. And so we'll use that. We'll go in every inch of the room, sprinkle holy water. I have a relic of the true cross of Christ. I'll bring that with me. And once we go in every room, I try to close any portals spiritually. And then there's an ending prayer. And then outside, I bless the property. And that's why I tell them, you know, later on, go and bury the four medals at the four corners of the property. Then there's a closing prayer, and that's the end of it. And then we pray that nothing comes home with us.
My co-host had actually said that he wanted to know what you thought about the theory that possibly aliens could be demons.
I think it's a possibility. I don't know for sure. But we don't, you know, in this that we're in, we're constantly exploring. We're constantly learning. And paranormal, you can't know everything. So we're constantly learning. Who knows? I believe in one exorcist, famous exorcist. I don't know if it wasn't Father Carlos Martins, but it was another one, Father Real or one of them, who said that, you know, somebody had an experience with an alien, with a spirit coming to the door, and it was actually an alien, you know. So I guess it could happen.
Yeah.
You know, I believe it. You know, the church doesn't have a teaching that says you can't believe that there's life on other planets. I mean, we have a vast universe. Who knows?
True. It's very, very true. Could advancing technology, like especially AI, could that become a tool for spirits, or even, you know, could that become vulnerable, you know, to possession itself also?
Good question. AI is a blessing and a curse. I'm seeing the good part of it. In fact, for the Holy Sword, my logo I created on AI, as limited as my technological knowledge is. However, I also saw where this guy was bashing. I don't know if you're familiar with Bishop Long.
No.
Okay. He's an independent Catholic priest, Catholic bishop. But anyways, he had some guy going after him, and he created an IE, a picture of them making out. And it looks real. And it's like, that's demonic. That's using it for evil. And yeah, I think with anything, the enemy can use it. And I think we're going to come to a time we're not going to know if something's AI or real. And that's going to do a lot affect, I think, the paranormal field. Because AI can make it look, you know, I saw one where somebody had Annabelle in her case, and she opened the case and walked out. I said, oh my God. And it was so realistic. Probably where the rumor came that, you know, we lost
her. Right.
It was missing. But I mean, yeah, that's a very good question. And yeah, we have to see where AI is going. It also put words in people's mouths. I believe, in my humble opinion, that we are living in a very decisive time in the battle between good and evil. And the devil knows his time is short, and he's taking no prisoners, and he's going to try anything. I mean, look at the senseless murders out there.
Right.
These you know, especially young people, you know, it's like,
yeah,
something is, you know, if it's not something mental illness, it is a spiritual thing there, that hate. So, yeah, I think that they'll latch on, demons will latch on to anything they can, and it might be AI.
The Catholic Church says that if you see a spirit, that it's never actually a spirit, that that's actually a demonic entity.
The church doesn't say that officially, but some have said that. That's an opinion out there.
Okay.
You know, that there's no spirits going around. But, you know, as a Roman Catholic priest, I've always had a devotion to the holy souls in purgatory, those that are awaiting going to heaven. Now, what is purgatory? We don't know. I mean, it's not a place, a physical place, neither is heaven or hell. So could some of these spirits be purgatorial spirits? Could some of these spirits be those that, for whatever reason, don't want to move on? For, you know, again, whatever unfinished business or fear or whatever. And that's their free will, and that God honors free will, because they have free will that goes into the next life because the angels have it. So, yeah, and that's my whole thing. And Jesus himself, when they said we thought it was a ghost, he said, no, look at my hands and my feet, you know, and know that a ghost does not have flesh and blood. Why would he say that? Hmm. You know, he could have said, he never gave up a teachable moment. He would have said, there's no such thing as ghosts. He didn't say that.
Right.
So.
Hmm. What do you have coming up in the near future?
Next month, well, actually, at the end of this month, the last day, my manager got me, as a couple of us friends, we're going to be in Lizzie Borden's house, spend the night down in the basement. Nice. Wow. I've never been to Lizzie Borden, and I live in Rhode Island. You know, it's my neighbor, Fall River. So doing that, Nice. That's a fun thing, just a fun thing. In October, I'm going with the Warren Museum to Rock Island, Illinois, for a paracon.
Right.
I'm not sure the name of the paracon. And then in the middle of the month, we're going to Lexington, Kentucky for a scare fest with the museum. So it's been great. I mean, like, I love the guys, and it's like a guy's trip. Well, it's not all guys, but, you know, my friend's daughter was a really wonderful person. But we just have a lot of fun together, you know. So these trips, we went on a tour. We went from Connecticut to West Virginia Penitentiary. From West Virginia Penitentiary, we went to New Orleans. From New Orleans, we went to San Antonio, Texas, and then back. I mean, it was almost 2 weeks, but it was fun. Wow. I mean, being with the guys.
Wow.
And meeting with people.
Yeah, I mean, say, that sounds powerful.
You know, we teach about good and evil. You know, why do you bring the doll and all them around? Because it's a teachable moment, with especially with young people who may not right now go to the museum to see it. And I pray over a lot of people. A lot of people come to me for prayer afterwards, you know.
What do you say about the people that are going around saying, oh, you know, I'm not going to mention any personal things that happened because, you know, it was a tragedy, you know, what happened. But what do you say about the people that say, oh, well, they should never be bringing, you know, that doll around?
Yeah.
You know, the Warrens said never to take her out. And, you know, obviously people just watch these movies and think that it's exactly what it was, you know.
Warrens never said not to take the doll out. As a matter of fact, they had Nights with Annabelle. They had these things. And when Ryan Buell first encountered the doll, it was in, I think, Pennsylvania, with Lorraine. So, yes, and bringing the doll around, you know, there's a lot of prayer that goes with it. But it gets people to come in so that we can teach them that there are spirits, there are demons, you know, how to protect yourself, and that, and that's what we do. And, you know, people judge. At first, I wasn't, right. I questioned it. I'll be honest with you, because I love Nesper. I said, what the hell are you doing? You know, but then when it was explained, you know, I said, it makes sense. Like, after this tour, I don't know whether we'll be doing that anymore, because They have a location for, they're going to make a state-of-the-art museum.
It better be in Connecticut.
It is.
Okay, good.
Are you, I never asked, where are you from?
I'm actually, I live in Upper Westchester in Putnam County.
Connecticut?
Basically. Well, no, I'm in New York.
Oh, New York.
I'm about 30 minutes from Danbury.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not far. And it was funny because, you know, we moved from New York City. We moved from Staten Island. And when we moved up here 6 years ago, I'm like, I wonder what's around here. And I'm like, oh, the Warren's house, you know, the Warren's. Yep. And then like, oh, closed permanently. Like, oh,
yeah, because no. It's zoning. But the good news is, and I will tell you this, Matt Rife and Elton Castay are going to do it right. To the memory of the Warrens, their house will become a bed and breakfast where people can actually stay there, you know, and it can be, and they're restoring the house, not to a new look, but restoring it to its traditional, you know, and the museum will be state of the art, including they're going to replicate the pantry where they used to sit and discuss in the kitchen and the living room. In that museum. Funny. So it's going to be, I'm excited because we'll be able to have, you know, conferences or lectures or whatever there. And I'm excited to learn that. So hang on, because you're going to probably want to see it when it's in that cave. Oh, you know?
Without a doubt. I mean, I got to see some of the artifacts at one of the Paracons a few years back. Actually, when Nesper first put, you know, Annabelle in one of these things. It was like maybe 4 years ago or so. And I got to see her, you know, I took a picture with her and stuff. And
we all did.
And all that and everything else. Took pictures of the mirror and everything. So it was definitely a cool experience.
Yeah.
So if anybody needed help or wanted to find out more information, how could they do that?
They can go on the website, which is www.HolySwordApostolate.com.
Okay. All right. And they could email you from there as well?
Yes. I mean my email is FatherBob444@Yahoo.com. FRBOB444@Yahoo.com.
Awesome.
They can get in touch with me that way.
Awesome. So thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
I love doing podcasts.
And when I tell you, I know we're probably going to have to do another interview because after this is over, I'm probably going to come up with a million other questions that I'm like, I should have asked them.
That's fine.
But no, thank you. Thank you so much for this. And, you know, good luck with everything. And, you know, I hope to see you out in, you know, in a public space one day too soon. Sure. So, all right. So
great.
Have a great night.
You too.
So thank you so much to Father Bob for that awesome, awesome interview. I learned a lot and, you know, I thank you so much. And, you know, we talked off of the recording too. And, you know, you definitely spoke some really, really great words to me. So thank you so much. And, you know, again, thank you for doing the interview. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you very, very soon again, especially I'm sure Creepy Ken is going to be mad that I didn't ask some questions that I should have. So we'll definitely be getting back to you again soon. But now, let's hear from my brother from another mother, Edgegrave Dave, and his horrible review and part 3 of his series of Dawn of the Dead.
Horrible Reviews with Edgegrave Dave.
Last time on part 2 of Edgegrave Dave's horrible review, we took a trip inside of the Living Dead Museum, which was inside of the Monroeville Mall, where 1978's Dawn of the Dead was filmed. Part 1. Part 2. Now, for the horrible conclusion of Part 3, we have 1978's Dawn of the Dead, Grave Diggers. And I think you know what that means. It's time for a walking, blood-curdling, edge-grave warning, spoiler alert. So guys, for this particular film, the way that I discovered it was sort of an unconventional one. I had mentioned that when I went to the Monroeville Mall that I had worn the very first Metallica shirt, the Young Metal Attack, that Cliff Burton had. Well, I remember watching footage on the DVD Cliff 'Em All, which was a VHS tape first, where Cliff Burton of the band Metallica, sadly, it was his last tour as he had tragically passed, he had worn a Dawn of the Dead sleeveless shirt on tour with Ozzy Osbourne, opening up for their amazing Master of Puppets record. And that shirt can be found in countless other places too. I used to rent the horror section from A to Z and everything in between. And I remember coming across the cover of Dawn of the Dead, and I said, that is the movie. I got to see that. At the time, I heard of Night of the Living Dead, but Dawn of the Dead, I did not even know, back in those days anyway, that they were even connected. So my zombie ziggers, I am going to tap into my teenage kindred spirited self that was so excited to go back to the Monroeville Mall, head into the museum, and then watch this film again. Well, that teenage self of mine remembered a very special team of Siskel and Ebert. These guys were the golden standard of film critics, and I am going to reach out to this very special guest and one half of that team, and Roger Ebert, as he considered this one of the 10 best horror films of all time, placing it in high ranks such as The Exorcist. He actually gave this film 4 stars. Now, in regards to the Edgegrave rating system, will it go that high? Well, we're going to find out. This is what Roger Ebert had to say, and his passing was unfortunately in 2013, the very same year that the video game Dead Rising 3 had come out and the original was right there, a parody and influenced by Dawn of the Dead, taking place by a zombie ravaged shopping mall where Frank West had to fight back. But this is what Roger Ebert had to say. According to the website Collider that has this article from the end of 2024, with a long list of adjectives to describe his visceral reaction to Dawn of the Dead, Ebert gave it 4 stars to the satiric view of the American consumer society. And that's 100% true, guys. Having escaped a horde of zombies and the growing epidemic, a group of survivors find safe haven in a shopping mall, becoming perhaps humanity's final existence. The George Romero film is the sequel to the cult classic Night of the Living Dead, appealing not only horror audiences, but also to the ghoulish voyeur in all of us. That's very, very interesting right there. If you can see beyond the immediate impact of Romero's imagery, if you can experience the film as being more than just a violent extremes, a most unsettling thought may occur to you. The zombies in Dawn of the Dead are not the ones who are depraved. The depravity is in the health the survivors, and the true immortality comes as two bands of human survivors fight each other. This right there, guys, is almost the whole basis of the show, The Walking Dead, and all of its spinoffs. That's one thing that George A. Romero was very forward thinking in. Is the real enemy? Is it the zombies? Well, look at what society, especially American modern society, would go through with this crazy thing happening. Because that's just it right there, is what would actually happen. A shopping mall seemed to be a really brilliant idea. There was actually a lot of comedy parts to it too. It really balances the horror. You get the drama of what the survivors have to go to. And there is a pregnancy, by the way. How to deal with that. How to escape. And what the world is really going through. I mean, there's a whole news team that are practically killing each other over what's going on. You have these special forces that are just shooting at all sorts of random people, just trying to make sure that there's no zombies. It's very hard to actually differentiate between if you're human or zombie. A couple of people almost got shot right there. People will step on each other just to try to get away. And there are some people that can't really get past the fact that their loved one is a zombie. And there's one scene in the very beginning where a gentleman in an apartment complex, he just rips right through the flesh of his wife. And oh man, you can't stay sad for too long because of all the zombie action and getting away. And even if you're bit, you just have to keep on going on and keep on fighting. Story-wise, that's the gist of what this movie is about. My favorite character is actually Peter Washington. He is a SWAT trooper that abandons his post because they're all going after all the zombies imposing martial law. Him and his fellow trooper Roger go with Roger's friend Steven and his girlfriend wife. They don't really specify Fran. It's the four of them against the world. With the previous film coming out in black and white in 1968, by 1978, this was a very modern movie by standards. I mean, it's the year that Halloween had come out. It's the year that things started going forward into the future. They did a lot with the special effects, although some people might feel that some of the special effects, and I will actually say this, could have been a little bit, I'm going to say, balanced throughout all the characters. There are some zombies that are just in like some kind of gray makeup. The red is very bright red blood. When I had originally seen it, I thought that'll look great. Then you have other zombies that just look as putrid as hell, and they're all decomposing, and there's a lot of blood. I feel like there were times that they concentrated on who was going to get the makeup that was really crazy looking and who was just going to be like a random zombie. Although I do have to give credit, Tom Savini did such a phenomenal job across the board in dressing everybody up. But you had patrons of the mall, you had a motorcycle gang, which Tom Savini was one of those people. You had people in an apartment complex. They had so many people in this movie dressed up as zombies. I can only imagine what the makeup might have looked like. But I think that it overall did work. I remember people that I was watching this with originally were like, oh, you know, it looks kind of like they're pale-faced. And one of those people was my daughter. Then I showed her a picture of what the zombie poster looked like from the movie Zombie and then Walking Dead people. And she understood everything is an evolution. I mean, we went from a black and white movie now to color, which was still a pretty big deal back then. And they used everything that they could for the mall, too, which is great. And they set up shop in the stores. They happen to have that ammunition store, which I talked about in part two. I mean, that happened to really work out for them. There's a lot of really funny scenes where they're in the ice skating rink. You get to see the humanity that people had. And with the interactions back and forth, it's very engaging. You have trying to get away from the zombie. You have the living conditions, like I had said. A lot of it makes a lot of sense. Then the music. Some of the music is kind of like really 70s, I'll call it like funky kind of disco-ish. And then you almost have like this cartoon kind of music in the way. I think that that was used to that satire, like Roger Ebert was saying, where looking at how everything is shifting from time has passed, and after a while, you're almost sort of used to it, that zombies are there. And how seriously can you take it when the same zombie keeps walking and tripping all over itself in the mall? Some of that is kind of funny. But then we shift to when you get bit, the horror that the transformation does take over. I would say overall, there was a definite type of charm and magic that this movie had where I can just go back and I could watch it again and again. Oddly enough, there was a remake in 2004. I thought that that was done very well as well. Night of the Living Dead had a colorized remake in 1990, although you could watch the original Night of the Living Dead in both ways. Then you've got the parody films, Return of the Living Dead. Then they went all the way to Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, Dead. This guy, George A. Romero, invented an entire zombie culture. And it's just amazing how this movie is one of the catalysts for that. So for the historical factor, I would absolutely see it if you can. I am going to agree with Roger Ebert, especially for the time frame of this film. I am going to give it 4 out of 5 graves. I think especially for the time period that it does deserve that, because this is a movie that is a time capsule in a way. And even if you weren't around in that time, and I'm not that old, I was still born a couple of years after that, I could appreciate the way that the world would have looked overrun by zombies. Back to you, Ghost Joe.
Thank you so much, Edgegrave, for that amazing, amazing review, as always. I definitely have to check out that mall, too. That sounds like a lot of fun. And just like that, the final echoes of Season 5 fade into the static. We've walked through haunted corridors, chased shadows across timelines, and questioned the very fabric of reality. If you've made it this far, you're not just a listener, you're part of the mystery. But remember, warped reality doesn't end when this episode does. It lingers. It waits. Until next time, keep your eyes open, your mind sharp, and never trust what you see in the dark. So stay tuned as the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast will return with all new episodes on Wednesday, October 15th, where we'll dive into more ghostly UFO and cryptid lore. We'll interview some amazing people within the paranormal community. And who knows, if you leave your paranormal experience on warpedrealityparanormal.com, call our voicemail at 845-600-0744, or email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com, we may feature your story on the show. Be sure to check out all of our socials, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and our awesome website that features all of our episodes, paranormal news, and more, warpedrealityparanormal.com. On behalf of Creepy Ken and me, thank you to all of our incredible guests, and a special shout out to Edgegrave Dave, John Wright, and the Natman. Most of all, thank you to our listeners. You make the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast possible, and we're grateful for everything you do. So I did want to say one more huge, huge thank you, and that is to my co-host, Creepy Ken. He's not on the show tonight, and it kind of upsets me a little bit that we weren't able to coordinate to make this last show possible, but we have many, many more shows and many, many more ideas coming up that we have in store, paranormal and not paranormal, so definitely keep a lookout. We'll definitely tell you guys all about it soon. But Ken has been a huge, huge help for me. We've only known each other for like 6 months at this point, and probably less. And it's like we've known each other for years. We get each other. We have the same, pretty much the same sense of humor, and we talk every day through text or whatever. And man, this is sounding a little bit concerning. But anyway, he's awesome, and he's a great co-host, and I'm glad to have found him, or he found me, or whatever. And, I can't wait to see what the future holds with Creepy Ken and Ghost Joe. And you shouldn't either, because we got some things coming up, man. We got some things planned. So, and, well, do we? I don't know. We have ideas. We have ideas planned, or ideas thought of. Anyway, thank you. Special huge thank you to Creepy Ken. Again, like I said, he does a lot with me for this podcast now. And honestly, I probably would have canceled it. I probably would have stopped this whole podcast thing and given up if he hadn't come along. So thank you, Creepy Ken. Let's start working on Season 6, man. All right. Until next time, everybody, we'll see you soon. Later. Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, and thank you to all of my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, please check out our show notes for all social media links of this show and some of our friends. The Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, uncovering the unseen.